Dear Swami, we offer the second episode of the podcast series SciCast at your Divine Lotus Feet. Please be with us here today, guide us, think through us, speak through us, and help us feel your presence so that we can learn something and grow through this podcast. Thank you, Sairam.
Sairam, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of SciCast. For those joining for the first time, I'm your host, Nandini Kalyanasundaram. I'm from Dallas, Texas. Co-hosting with me is Anna Gurevich. She's a young adult from Boston, Massachusetts. Anna?
Sairam all. A heartfelt and loving thank you to all of the listeners for their encouragement and support for this podcast series. If you've not yet had a chance to check out episode 1, Grace Under Pressure with Geeta Govindarajan, it's available online at www.satyasai.us/SWC2019. You can find the recording to that podcast by clicking on the link Pre-Conference Initiatives and then the link for SciCast, Let's Talk About It.
We are excited that a tentative program for the first National Women's Conference has been announced. If you have not yet registered, please register as soon as you can. The last day for registration is June 10th. We are counting on you to spread the word about the conference to not only the Sai Sisters in your own centers, but in other centers as well. If you have any questions about the Women's Conference, please send them to SWC2019USA@gmail.com.
Now, without further ado, on to today's episode. This episode is titled Inside Out, Spirituality, Service, and the Self. We are going to explore the world of selfless seva, its part in growing one's spirituality, and overall, the impact of seva on the self. We are joined today by our special guest, Auntie Sheila Nayak.
Sairam, thanks for having me and helping me relive some of the absolute wonderful experiences.
Thank you, Sheila Auntie. Before we dive in, Sheila Auntie, we'd like to introduce you to our listeners. Sheila Auntie has been with Swami since the early 1970s, and throughout that time, she has had many wonderful experiences. Sheila Auntie has been active in service activities both in the US and in India. She has a bachelor's and master's degree in early childhood education. She was instrumental in setting up and administering the Head Start program where it was first rolled out, and she's been involved in setting up daycare centers in the US. She was also the service coordinator for the Mid-Atlantic Region 2 in the US for 5 years. Sheila Auntie was involved in coordinating medical supplies going to Haiti and to the super specialty hospitals, and now also is a coordinator for the International Medical Supplies Project covering Region 2 and Region 3. Auntie was instrumental in setting up the nursing school under Swami's guidance in Whitefield. She also has set up a non-profit foundation that has been blessed by Swami that is carrying out various service activities.
Wow, Sheila Auntie, it sounds like you'll have a lot to share with us today on this topic. Why don't we jump into the first question, which is, what was your first introduction to Swami and how did seva become a critical part of your life?
My first exposure to Baba's anything was in 1972. And a friend of mine from Oregon and I went to India and went to our home. And one of the uppermost things in my mind at, for several years was for my working with children, I had to go through a TB test. And I was not happy with it. And in my absence from India, my sister had become a doctor. And so in chatting the very first night, I asked her, do you have any suggestions? She said, let's go see Swami. I asked my friend, what do you think? And she said, let's go. Since they're saying, let's go, let's go. So we started our plan to go to Patti the next day. My parents, my brother, two sisters, and the two of us, Dee and I, started going to Patti. The driving was done by my brother, and everybody else fell asleep. It was night, very difficult road and all that. And I was trying to keep him awake, chatting. And in quite unknowingly, I also conked off for a minute. And in my sleep, it came, turn left, turn left. And I woke up and my brother says, I think I'm lost. I was supposed to turn left somewhere. I said, oh, that's funny. That's the exact dream I had. He said, let's turn around. And we turned around. This is midnight, okay? Turned around, and sure enough, there was a big rock on it. Was an arrow showing that you have to turn left to go to Patti. So anyway, we took it, and we got there, and took a bath and all that, and went in for darshan. In those days, there was only the accommodation in a shed. That's it. There were no rooms, no nothing. We're walking in, and Baba makes a sign. And the volunteer leader says, Amma, go. I said, go where? And she said, he's calling you for an interview. I said, I haven't applied for a job. And she said, go, Amma, go. So I went, not knowing what in the world I'm doing. I went, and my friend Dee came with me, and my sisters and my parents came also. But Baba stopped all of them and just let my brother and my friend Dee and me in. And the very first thing was a funny experience. I told my friend, well, let's keep a close eye on his sleeve, okay? Because I hear he materializes things, you know. And she said, yes. And Baba very smilingly puts his arm between the two of us. We're both standing. And pushes his sleeve up and materializes Vibhuti. And smilingly looking at me, gives it to me. So I didn't know what a Vibhuti was anyway. Then he asked, what do you want? I said, we are in the process of returning to India. He said, no, for 5 years, with his hands he showed, 5 years, East will be like West, West will be like East. Stay there. So that was the very first time in Patti.
So Srila Aunty, Swami says that service activities are the highest purpose in life. Has Swami ever spoken to you directly about service?
Oh, lot of times. Lot. The following time, he asked me, what do you want to do? What do you want? He said. I said, I want to start an orphanage. He said, no, start vocational training. He said. I said, okay, yeah. And so I wanted to start vocational training, but I didn't know where to start, what to do, anything. Okay, so I'm exploring and all that. Nothing was falling in place. The following time when I went there, again, he called me. And I said, Baba, you said to start vocational training. It's not falling in place. He said, where you are, there are many poor people. Start, he said. I came back and I went through the newspaper to see what organization was asking for volunteers so I could start something, anything. And the one that was in within my area was Goodwill. So I called them and I said, I would be happy to help with everything and whatever you're looking for. But I would like someone to explain to me overall, how does the organization work and funding and all that kind of a thing, because I know nothing about Goodwill. Other than, of course, I had seen the stores. So I went there and they gave me a tour of the facility and everything else. And the thing that totally floored me was the main thing Goodwill does is vocational training. And that made me very excited. I immediately said, yes, I'll do whatever you want, need me to help with and all that. So that's how I got started.
Thank you for all the stories, Aunty. I think for me, the whole order of events from the dream and then your interview and Swami materializing Vibhuti, I actually didn't know Goodwill was doing vocational training. So that's pretty fascinating as well. But it all kind of goes to show that he was ready to receive his daughter almost when you were on your way. So that's very poignant of you to share with us. Now, Swami has also said that the spirit of service should be coupled with readiness for sacrifice. Only then it can be called selfless service, free from any taint or self-interest. In this day and age, Aunty, when we are balancing multiple obligations and responsibilities, is there any limit to selfless service? And if so, what is it, do you think, which stops us from it? Do you think it's ego that says, no, that's too much or that's too inconvenient, that makes us feel too uncomfortable? What are your thoughts on that?
I think the opportunities he puts our way. How do we take it and what direction do we go? What do we do is up to us. Are you going to give up very quickly or are you going to keep on trying that until it gives some clarity to you one way or the other? Now, one of the things that happened was I had a dream. I'm not much of a dream-oriented person, but that particular dream, Baba came in my dream. As a matter of fact, that's the only dream I've had where I saw Baba. And he said, no, I want, and I don't want. What I give you is the best. Flow with life and enjoy it, he said. Now I got up from bed because it was so real type of feeling, and I wrote it all down. And very soon we had a trip planned to Patti. And he called us. And when I say, by the way, when I say us, in 83, he told me to bring groups. After that, I never went by myself. Whoever was willing to go with us and join the group kind of a thing. And he called us and he said, I came in your dream 30 days ago. And, you know, I'm still only listening because I didn't know the date and all that kind of thing offhand. And I told you, he said, now I'm waiting to get back to my room to look at the date. Sure enough, it was exactly 30 days. And what he had told me was, no, I want, and I don't want. What I give you is the best. Flow with life and enjoy it. I started looking at my own behavior and I found that I had more I don't wants. See, I always thought want meant a desire and that is not good. That's what I had thought. I did not realize that I don't want is also a desire. And as I started watching myself, I realized I am filled with I don't want. I don't want this. I don't want this. I don't want this. I don't want this. So when opportunities were coming my way, I used to analyze it. And, you know, of course, quite a bit was I don't want. After that, I stopped that. Of course, I don't want still comes in my head, but I stop it. That is how I learned to deal with it.
There is a deep wisdom there, auntie. I don't want is also desire. I don't think I've ever looked at it that way.
Yeah.
I just wrote it down.
I did not. Yep.
Yeah. So then it like opens you up and then allows you to kind of experience everything.
Correct.
Swami throws at you and just take it.
Correct.
On as he being the doer.
Yes.
So Shilanti, what do you think about activism as a form of spirituality or seva? Can you consider something selfless service if you're trying to achieve a specific result?
The result is not the issue, my thought. It is result for who? Is it that you want to show off and that is why you're looking for the result? Are you looking for that result because you're going to benefit something from it? That is where the difference comes.
That makes sense, auntie. Mm. Auntie, in reference to this question from Anna, I know you had an experience in Gujarat where you took some of the goodwill donations and I know you had a situation there. Would you be willing to share that with our listeners today?
Yes. I started that volunteering at Goodwill, and that word got out, you know, in chatting and everything else. And right then was that Gujarat earthquake. And they were sending a lot of things there for the people. And whatever happened, a whole bunch of boxes got left behind. And so the person called me and said, would you consider taking this to India, not to Gujarat, just to India, because, you know, there were saris and salwar kameezes type of thing. And I said, yeah, I think so. Now, we have a group going. I'll put it to them and see what they have to say. Everybody was allowed two pieces of luggage. So I put it to them that, would you be willing to take a second piece of luggage? Second piece of luggage in service and one for yourself. And everybody was on board for that. So we ended up taking however many people we had. I think it was 36 or something at that time. And then my husband and I decided we can manage with one piece between us. So it is three for us. And I told everybody, I'll do the packing, but I want you to open and see what it is, because people at the airport do ask you. And everybody was, you know, very friendly, very cooperative and all that. So we took all these boxes. And when we took the boxes, until the taking time, it was all only that in my head. Then once we got on the flight, I thought, what am I going to do with all these things? So then a person who had come to the airport to pick us up, and she said, oh, there's a government orphanage here. I'll go ask. I'm sure they will be happy to take it. So she took all the boxes and went there. And they were very happy that they were getting all these clothes and all that. And as, you know, the normal chatting that goes on when something is, you're waiting for time type of thing. She asked them, what do you do here? And they said, nothing. You just stay here? They said, yes. So then she went and talked to the top people there and asked them, would you be interested if we can do vocational training kind of things for these women? And they said, yes, bring whatever you're thinking about and all that. She knew several factory type people and Montessori school and things like that. And she went and asked them, are you willing to take some girls and train them for working here? And they said, yes. So we had to make arrangements for a van to have them picked up, then serve them breakfast and take them to the various places. And they all fitted in. They chose first the owner had to say, yes, I'll take two girls, I'll take five girls or whatever, each place. And then the girls had to say, yes, I like that kind of work. I'll try that one, I'll try this one and all that. So those girls were taken from the government orphanage to the various places for training and then drop them back after the training time each day. And that went on, I don't know, maybe 3 to 5 years. I don't remember exactly. But I do know we were able to get 161 girls out of the orphanage to stand on their own feet.
Wow, 161. Mm. That's very amazing.
Yes.
The power of seva done one step at a time, right?
Yeah, exactly.
One follow-up question to that, Aunty, is I'm sure, I mean, when you say over 3 to 5 years you were able to get 161 girls out of the orphanage and working, I'm sure that that must have been a difficult process over time. How do you maintain commitment to something like this when day-to-day you come across obstacles, maybe difficult people that you're working with and moments when you may have, you know, things have you question whether you're doing the right thing or not?
Interestingly, we did not have that thought in our heads at all, that are we doing the right thing type of a thing. The girl who, you know, started, the lady who started this thing when she took the clothes and all that kind of thing, handled everything. All we had to do was the funding, plus every time when we went there, meet the girls, see what their feedback was, meet the government officials, and see how everything was going. That is all that was going on. It was no problem at all. And when one day out of nowhere, Baba stopped in front of me and said, no government. And I said, Baba, the girls are coming from the government orphanage. He said, no government. That was it. And we had to stop that. So, you see, he gives you the job. He stops it also when the time is, you have to stop it.
But through these, Aunty, it's very fascinating for me to see that how Swami has so much foresight. Of course, he will have foresight. That's why he's Swami. Mm. But even earlier when you said that the East, he's where he said to you, East will become West, West will become East. So he urged you to stay in the U.S. And now this other situation wherein he's like asking you not to stay with the government, he's constantly channeling the energies.
Correct.
To kind of get to a position where we want to be.
Correct.
Yeah. But I would like to flip this situation a little bit, Aunty. So Swami reminds us to serve everyone and recognize everyone is God. But, you know, there is a challenge in day to day when you're working with things. It's you come across people that you probably don't share the same values with, or you don't feel that positive vibe. So how do you see the divinity in people you don't know or don't get along with?
See, that thing about I don't get along with should not come up at all. Everybody who comes in your life is there for a purpose. What is the purpose? Maybe for you to learn. It is very difficult to deal with people like this. So what are you going to do? Okay. Other people are maybe a different direction is what you need to go. So if the difficult situations are also put your way for a purpose, for a period. And then you can go beyond it without a whole lot of emotions around it. See, that when we have the emotions, oh, this is not good. Oh, this is wonderful. This is, when we have that, then we are taking control. And you don't have control.
Hmm. Do you have an example from your life experience, Auntie, or a story where you had a challenging time and situations kind of turned them around for you?
The biggest one I had is the one I shared about, you know, my Head Start job. Do you want me to share that again?
This is a great story, Auntie. In fact, just for our listeners, we actually speak to our speakers ahead of time to kind of get to know them, get to hear their stories. And this story in particular, Auntie, I've actually spoken to a few people and I've told them that it's such a fascinating story with a great twist at the end. So some people are expecting to hear this from you to wonder and are wondering what that twist towards the end is. So please go ahead.
Okay. I'm very young. My first real job, I should say second, it wasn't the first one. First one I did for a year and a half, and this one was my second job. And my job was to set up these Head Start programs. And there was a top guy and three of us under him, and I was one of them. The other two had different responsibilities. And this one of the guys just literally hated me. And it was very obvious. And one day I even bluntly asked him, why do you hate me so much? He said he was in Korea during the war and I don't like people from other countries and all that. So I said, well, I don't have a choice on that one. I am what I am. So anyway, it went on. And, you know, my job is going on. Very frustrating because he kept on finding faults with me. And he really had nothing to do with me. Yet he kept on finding faults and telling people about me and all that within the office. One fine morning, we get notice that our top guy is resigning and they were going to have to look for a new person to take his role. And there's a committee, all of whom serve without getting paid and all that kind of thing, you know, board of directors. And they interviewed several people and they hired this one guy from Montana. And my work was with the Head Start, which means it was not in the same building as all the office people were in. So one day he comes, and he says, I am so-and-so. I want you to give me a report of if you were given my job, how would you do it? What would you do? And I want it on my desk by Monday, okay? I said, okay. So I had no problem because, you know, I was always... thinking if it went this way, if it and I got it ready, put it on his desk Monday. I had to go to his office to put it on his desk. And my building was separate. And within a very short time, he went through all of those. Everybody, he supposedly told that to all the other people also, the two other people. And they also gave the reports. And in the meantime, his supposedly wife said to him, I don't feel like coming to Oregon. I like Montana. I want to stay here. So he gave his resignation. He said, doesn't look like it's going to work. He had been there about 3 months. And he said, it looks like I'll have to go back to Montana. So I'd like to resign. However, I have a reference this to the board of directors. I would like to hire her. That's me. Because of the report I had given. And he said, that's how I would like our office to run. Second thing, I want that guy to be fired. Because his whole report was all the things that he thinks she's doing wrong. Not even one thing about how my role should be. So I want him to be fired. And the board of directors said, okay, we'll consider it, and left it at that. And in the meantime, the other two people, one had a heart attack. It was a woman. She had a massive heart attack and died. And this other one had to go to the hospital because of some ulcer problem. So, of course, they immediately let me take over his job. And they fired the other guy. And this person left to Montana. Now, a few years later, I'm in Patti. I'm going one direction, other direction, a whole bunch of women are coming and all that. And I quite, because of the crowd, innocently hit her hand and the things from her hand fell down. And I bent down and picked it up and handed it to her and I said, I'm sorry. And she said, oh, I think you're from US, right? I can tell from your accent, she said. I said, yeah. And she said, I am so-and-so. Okay. I said, oh, really? From so-and-so from Montana, she said. I said, oh, really? Do you know so-and-so from Montana? And she said, oh, that's my husband. Swami got us married. So, you see, it was not only Baba handled the whole thing. He's making me aware. Who do you think handled this thing? I did. Not you. That's me. Not me. Him handling it. Because here was this woman from Montana meeting me in Parthi. I mean, just think. How much is it possible? So, anyway, he's given me plenty of that kind of experiences that, you know, constantly remind me that he's in charge, not me.
Thank you, Shilanti, so much for sharing that story. It's really incredible to see how things, you know, work out in the end. Mm-hmm. And when you see the connections and see mm-hmm. the larger picture.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How do you stay connected to Swami and being open to seeing those connections in life and seeing the opportunities to serve?
I pray before I get into anything. Whatever comes my way, I explore it totally and do my best in analyzing it and all that kind of a thing. But I'm constantly praying and saying, you know, you take care of it. I don't know what to do.
That's a good reminder for us all, Auntie.
Yeah.
To give it at his feet and then have him take over.
Yeah.
But how can we remind ourselves when we say selfless seva that it is not us, but it's him working through us? Especially most times when we have expectations of outcomes or how to let go and just focus on the process and focus on Swami. I know you said prayer is one. Do you have any other tools for us?
I don't. I have gotten enough experiences. And when I would be in Parthi, I went many times, okay? When I would be in Parthi, he would verbalize even without my asking. So when you've had several of those kinds of things, you begin to learn to, you know, leave it to him kind of a thing. That he's in charge, it's not you. Until then, you know, like first slap is one experience, second slap is kind of confirms it, third slap does it, you know, type of a feeling overall again and again. So many times, many things. See, for example, we would, as I said, I never went by myself after he said bring groups. So every time I would take whoever joined us. And you know, at the end of the day, they have this meditation session for foreigners, as they call it. And I used to run after bhajans to get in there. And one time, the lady at the door stopped me before I could get in. She said, wait, Amma, wait, let them come out the other door, the people from the inside the mandir, and I'll let you go in after they come out. Because remember, the mandir had two doors, right? And the other side, all the people came out, and everybody pushed her, and she's an older lady. Everybody pushed her, and they went in. They went in the mandir. And here, I was the first one there, and I couldn't even get in. So I couldn't help it. I just started crying. And she said, Ma, please don't cry. Swami doesn't like you to cry. I said, but I was the first one here. You didn't let me in. And she said, you saw how everybody pushed and I couldn't stop it and all that and all that. So I said, okay, well, I came to the room. And what we had a habit of doing was to write all the questions we were going to ask Baba, connected to our work, and when he calls kind of thing, because he always called us. And I had that paper in my room. So when I went back to the room, I tore up that paper. I thought, gosh, he's not going to call us. He wouldn't even let me come in a meditation room. Come on, you know. So I tore up that letter. Next morning, of course, he had to call us, right? He called us. He looks at me and goes, now you cannot see me, but he goes, why you cry so much? He said, exactly with that facial expression, okay? As though he's crying. I said, Baba, I couldn't come in. You know, I'm stuttered and everything else. I'm here. Don't cry, he said. I said, okay, okay. Then I used to cry quite a bit, okay? You know, quite a bit, as a matter of fact. And I thought, you know, I've already torn up the letter, so I didn't ask him anything and all that. And he said, you can go. I thought, okay, where am I going? You know, I don't know. So then Ramesh said, let's go see my mother and all that. I said, okay. So went to his hometown. And they took us to a place where, you know, I don't want to call it palmistry, but something like that. And the guy would say all kinds of things on his own without saying anything, without asking anything. It was extremely hot. And so I hid behind Ramesh because there was a window there and at least I could get a little bit of air type of thing. And the guy looks at me. He really couldn't see me straight, but looks at me and says, how is business? And believe me, I did not look like a businesswoman. I looked like a sweaty, you know, whatever you want to call it. And he, on his own, answered the questions that we had on that piece of paper that I tore up without asking. On and on and on. So, in other words, he gives you the answers from somewhere or the other. It isn't necessarily that he's going to give it directly. Because nobody would have known my business questions. Nobody. So how did he know someone from a village type atmosphere? In other words, he was showing me again and again and again, I am in charge. Don't keep on getting into this. Because I cried. Then I, you know, all kinds of things. I'd torn up the paper. And they were not the kind of questions anybody would ask. Because they wouldn't know about my work. So, bottom line is that he gives the answers sometimes directly, sometimes through dreams, sometimes through somebody else, but it comes very clear at that time. It doesn't make you wonder, is this really what is meant for me? You won't even wonder that. It'll come very clear. It is meant to be.
Here we are talking about seva. We often forget the amount of seva Swami does for us, right, Aunty? To get us back on track.
Yes. No question about it. Yep.
So, Aunty, in terms of seva, so far we've been talking about how can we provide seva, how can we continue giving back to the community, how can we seek Swami's blessing, keep Swami in our mind as we continue working through all of the service project that we are engaged in. But if we were to look on the other side, sometimes we might not be providing the right seva to the community that we are serving. So how can we balance that intention versus what is actually needed for that community that we are providing service for?
I handle that in a very simplistic way, super simplistic, as a matter of fact. Like I told you, even at the goodwill level, you know, I always go in and say, can you please give me a complete tour of the place and show me what all goes on here, how it happens and all that, how does the funding come, everything. And then I can decide what in that I can get involved in or not involved in. Okay, and that is how I did in shelter after shelter after shelter. And I found that not every shelter has the same need, that some shelters need really food. Some shelters need, one shelter was funny. They said food, of course, but cook here, right there, okay, in their shelter, not from home and bring it. Cook it right here, and then if you don't mind, please, could you join them? You know, they have a nice dining area. And so you can have some common conversation kind of thing. And in that particular one, I've been to many shelters, okay. In that particular one, I kept feeling some eyes on me. So I suddenly turned around deliberately and looked. It was an Indian guy. And that's what he was avoiding. He didn't want me to see him. And so I walked over and put my arm around him and I said, okay, young man, what are you doing here? And he said, I came here with a very good job, no problem at all. But not even a single friend, not even a single family member. And I went into drinking and I lost my job, he said. That's why I'm here. Now, was I able to help him? No, I couldn't think of anything. There was something, I would have something. But I just, you know, gave him a big hug and I said, look, you don't belong here. So you need to get out and find something. You cannot stay. Yes, can you not come here and eat food? Yes, you know, that's not a big thing. Anybody is allowed to come in and eat food there, but you must stand on your own feet. So a stupid speech type feeling, but there was nothing else I could do for him right there and then. If that opportunity had come, I would have. But this was only a speech that was needed at that time. What was interesting was there was a woman, black woman, at the table eating. And she heard all this. And she asked me, where do you go? What group do you belong to? I said, so I chatted with her for a little while. And you won't even believe it. She showed up at the center. Sai Center the following time. So you don't know what leads to what, but you know, you can't do it with the ego. You cannot do it with any outline other than this has come my way, so I have to handle it in the best way I can kind of a thing.
Thank you so much for for spending this time with us, Shilanti. You touched on so many things, like that Swami is in charge, but that we still must take every opportunity to serve.
Absolutely.
And help where we can.
Mm.
And in the way that we can.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for taking us through your journey, Aunty, because that truly for us has showed the importance of service, how to keep at it and give it to him, so that you can go through the process, and at the end of it, if it goes well, attribute it only to Swami because it is his doing, and if not, just keep at it for the next thing that he will possibly send our way. But
yeah.
In all of this, have Swami's faith, have his faith in whatever we do.
Yeah, no question about it. See, I'll end up on one last funny one. The hospital communicated, the Whitefield Hospital, that they needed some things. And said, okay, but you have to do the ordering, we'll do the paying and all that, because I want it to be exactly what you want. And they said, yes. So they took care of it here. And then I had to hunt for someone who was willing to take it and all that. And that also worked. It reached them. And you won't even believe it. It seems they put it at Baba's feet in his room, and pray on it. And then they take it to the hospital and use it. So this particular thing, they put it at his feet and they're praying on it. And Vibhuti came all over it. And they got so excited on it. They scraped the Vibhuti into, small packages and immediately communicated with me. We're sending the Vibhuti to you because we feel he was guiding that this. So even now, we're talking about, 8 or 9 years after he's passed away? He's still guiding us in any way, every way. And we're still surprised. We don't take it for granted. That's the thing, That's a yeah, kind of a thing. So that arrived about maybe a month ago. Yeah. So that's it.
What a beautiful note to end on.
Mm.
Thank you again so much for joining us today.
Okay.
It's been an honor to listen to your stories and have you share your experience and your wisdom with us.
They're endless stories, and I enjoyed reliving it.
And Auntie, we now have your phone number. We are going to be bothering you even after this SciCast for a lot more pearls of wisdom.
Okay. I'm there for you. So... No, I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
For those of you listening in right now, please tune in to the next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, June 4th, the same time. If you're interested in attending the Psy Women's Conference in Trenton, New Jersey on June 29th and 30th, please register soon online, as registration will close on June 10th. All the information about the conference is online at www.satyasai.us/SWC2019.
Please continue to check out Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp for the posts that our social media team has been collecting from all around the country. On both Instagram and Facebook, you can search for and follow Psy Women's Conference 2019 to see these posts.
Shilanti, thank you again so much for being here today. And thank you to everyone who tuned in as well. Sayam and good night.